FBI Studios. This is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. This is your final Friday follow-up for the year 2020. This, I think, we can all agree, has been a pretty rough and interesting year. So I'm ready for 2020 to be gone and to be over with. And so for this follow-up, the timing worked out great because the interview, the main episode this week with David Ridgeon, talking about Someone Knows Something, didn't dig into any specific case. It turned into more of just a chat between me and David, which I loved, by the way. And so not a lot of questions. So we decided for this week's follow-up, being the final follow-up for 2020, that we would let you guys ask us anything. So we took a bunch of random questions that you all sent us. Some of them are about cases we've done, and some of them are completely unrelated. I had put in the post on the Facebook fan page that you can even ask us what we had for lunch this week. So we got a ton of questions. We're excited to get to them, excited to put a positive button on the end of 2020, hoping for bigger and better things next year. I'm joined by Mr. Zach Weaver, who said he wants to say hi before we started recording. So go ahead, Zach.
Hey, guys.
And Mike Bussing, who doesn't want to say hi.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that you did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, wait a minute. Before we get to the questions, I was told to do homework on this.
I did.
And I listened to the entire season of season 6 of Someone Knows Something.
Right.
So I did the homework, but we're not taking the test.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you that we weren't going to take the test that you studied for. But it was, you know, I actually just, because I hadn't finished that season yet, when I talked today, our in a little behind the scenes here, we were scheduling an interview for the following week. And then David texted me and said, hey, can we just do this right now? When I was in the middle of episode 1 of season 6. So I had to like scramble and do some research on the case before the interview. But so Zach, before we get into our Ask Us Anything questions, your thoughts on the Donny Izzet case?
I found it really fascinating. That was actually one of the more fascinating cases we've talked about this season, in my opinion.
What do you think about the format? Because you've never been a big true crime guy.
I really haven't been.
Prior to coming on the show and through this season, you've had listened to a lot of true crime podcasts. And Someone Knows Something is in all honesty, this is not just me bullshitting, is one of my absolute favorite podcasts. What did you think of his format?
By far, this is the best format that I've heard. I absolutely love the way he put this together. I think all the little interviews and the little snippets and everything just being, you know, caught in real time. You know, obviously the podcast is produced, so I don't mean it was put out in real time, but just the emotions. And, you know, there's times where he's talking to the mom, and I mean, just the emotions he's capturing, because it's not fake. You know, it's caught all at that time.
And it's cool because we got to hear him talk about that process. But yeah, he really just, you feel like you're there, because he records everything. Like the most, it actually brought a tear to my eyes was the part where and there's some spoilers here. You've had a week now to listen after this came out, so there'll be some spoilers for this. But you know, when they told Donnie's mom that they believe they found human remains in the burn pile, you know, when she lights up the prosecutor and starts yelling at him, and then just completely breaks down, and David, you know, hugs her and is trying to console her and tell her to take deep breaths. Like, that was just so raw and real, and you could tell for us audio producers, from the audio quality, It was incidental that he captured that audio. I know exactly what happened. He was holding his Zoom, which was recording when he hugged her and was holding her in it, because it wasn't a direct, like he was talking into a microphone as he's consoling her and she's crying, and then he's like kind of speaking for her to the rest of the crew, or to the prosecutor. It's just so powerful. It's so well done.
It was really well put together. In the case, I mean, the way he was able to strum up. I mean, obviously the mother of the victim really has done a ton of work, which helped But everything he put together and tracking everything down, it was amazing to hear and really well put together.
He's bold, you know, like some of the interviews he goes after.
Oh, yeah, he interviews Shane Gunther's brother,
mm-hmm.
who is the main suspect in the case.
Right.
And, I mean, he just walks up on him and starts talking, and the guy's trying to get away from him. He just keeps hammering him with questions.
That's what I love about him is his relentless, because so many times, and I think back to people that I've tried to interview
mm-hmm.
who have told me no. And it's like, I might try a second time, like, well, can I just ask you? And like, no, and I'm okay. And I back off,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he's just got a way about him of, without being overly forceful, just continuing to poke and prod and poke and prod and poke and prod until he finally gets them talking or before they realize that they've given a 15-minute interview. Like, I don't, and Shane's brother was like that. I just don't want to talk about it. Well, what about this? Well, yeah, and he'll answer that question, but like, I just don't want to get involved. Well, what do you think about this? And he answers that one. I'm excited to see when an update comes out because there are some developments. And David didn't really share with me exactly what they were, just enough to let me know that, you know, there's going to be an update coming out soon on that. Because we left it with the bone fragments were out to be tested to see if they were human. Sounded like there was some conflicting reports, but then they took soil samples and sent them to two different places, to two different sets of cadaver dogs who are trained to only detect the smell of human remains. And both sets, one in Nevada and one in Canada, both alerted to the soil samples that there were human remains there.
Yeah, I'm really interested to hear an update on this case.
Yeah. All right, so in you probably didn't have time to check out season 3, did you?
I did not.
Dude, you would like that so much.
I spent all my time and effort on season 6.
Right.
Because we were supposed to talk about it.
That's my bad. But the case we were just talking about in the other room,
mm-hmm.
Season 3 is very similar.
Okay.
You know, I think you'd like it a lot. It's one of the most heartfelt, and I know I said this on the podcast, I won't harp on it too much, but super interesting, very powerful as they're digging. But then, like, when the brother of one of the victims, like, goes down, obviously a black man, and goes down and actually reconciles with one of the clan members that was a part of killing his brother, and just, like, being there with him as he's going through that healing process is just David Ridgen is a master. He's I think, of all the true crime podcasters that I love, and there's a lot of them, he's by far my favorite. That was in our interview this week, I've got Paul Holes. He's a big deal. And I love Paul too, but you just can't beat David Ridgen for me. He's just so good at what he does.
All right. We'll get into these questions. They're all over the place, but we're going to have a lot of fun with them. Our first one comes from Lucy, and it does pertain to season 6 of Someone Knows Something. She says, what's up with Kyle Barnes' voice? Is it just his drug use? His family hinted at a personality shift. Nervous tick? Seems odd to me.
We were just talking about that before we came in too, that, so if you listened, you know that the police, so Kyle, if you haven't listened to the podcast, you don't plan to do so. So Kyle, you know, Donnie Izzett, as David explained, you know, was traveling the country. He's a gay man, and he's traveling with his partner, and they go down to Mississippi, disappears. Years later, I think it was years later, Donnie's mom gets a hold of this guy, Kyle, who explains that, admits to her that he saw Donnie's body and helped burn his body, and that this guy that Zach had mentioned, Shane Gunther, had shot him 3 times in the back with a .22. And David mentions it in his VOs, and then we hear it in the interviews that Kyle's got a weird, he talks super fast and breathy, sounds extremely nervous at all times when he's talking.
Very spastic.
Yeah, it's even hard to listen to. And it was mentioned that he was like a whiz, like he was like thriving in school and business. Then he got into drugs, and they kind of blamed the drug use. One of his friends or whoever blamed the drug use for the shift and like the way he talks and all that. I kind of felt bad for the guy because, I mean, obviously, you know, he helped bury a body and kept it from his family, which is horrible. But then if he's telling the truth, he's doing the right thing,
mm-hmm.
right? And knowing the police had been very clear with him on multiple occasions, you're going to prison for this.
Yeah.
You are confessing to being an accessory after the fact. He's got nothing to gain, and he is just saying, no, that Shane did this. And the police and prosecutors are doing nothing with it. And he says, you know, well, we did it, and we burned the body. at this location. Then later they go to that location, they dig it up, they find bones. That's where the cadaver dogs hit. Seems like the story is legit. But when he is being interviewed by police, they're hammering on him, and they're saying, we don't believe you. We don't believe that you don't know anything else. We think you were there. We think you were part of it. And I think that is primarily because of his speech pattern.
I would have to agree.
You know, like everything he's saying lines up. And again, the fact that he's telling you something that's going to send him to prison and he knows it, but he's just trying to do the right thing. But he sounds, I feel like they didn't do what they needed to do, which was to get a baseline from him to see how he talks normally. And so as he's telling them the story, he's doing this quick, breathy, nervous, and they're just assuming that he's lying. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, there hasn't been a prosecution in the case, because they don't believe him. And I think a lot of that hinges on the way he speaks.
Okay, and this one's from Sierra. In response to your post on Facebook, she wants to know, what did you have for lunch today?
Well, it's not lunch time yet today. That was yesterday that she wrote that. So what did I? Oh, I had chicken mush for lunch yesterday.
What? What did you just say?
Chicken mush.
Chicken mush.
Becky had a failed recipe the night before. Usually my lunch is leftovers from the night before. And the night before, she told me she was trying this new recipe, and it was like this creamy chicken and rice crockpot dish, which sounded fabulous to me. And then when I got home on Monday night to eat said creamy chicken and rice, it was chicken mush. Like the rice just kind of fell apart. It was so bad. It was like the tasted good, but it was the texture of it. It was like, imagine eating hot pudding. Like that was the texture of it. With little chunks in it.
Obviously, unless you're watching, you didn't just see that, but I just like got nauseous. Like I just, oh.
So that's what I had for lunch yesterday. If you closed your eyes and you tried to imagine you were eating chicken and dumplings, it wasn't bad.
Next question.
What'd you have for lunch yesterday?
I don't know, but I'm over that question now.
How many 16 different hamburgers did you? Zach is doing some power lifting, and so he's trying to take in a lot of calories. So I'm genuinely curious what you had for lunch yesterday.
I don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday, but I did have a good burger this week.
Yeah, just one?
One good burger this week.
How many sides?
It was a Boss burger, and it was a burger, and it had pulled brisket, smoked sausage, and bacon on it.
Fantastic.
It was delicious.
Did you get two appetizers and two side dishes?
Just one appetizer. Loaded buffalo wings.
Nice, which is a whole nother meal.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike, you probably just didn't eat lunch yesterday.
Tacos, man.
You had tacos, leftover tacos.
Yep, pork tacos. Okay.
Well, you heard it here first, folks.
Ugh.
Next one.
Lee wants to know, what did you ask Santa for this year?
Well, I actually did ask Santa for something this year. I usually don't. I'm usually not. I like to give gifts, not a big receiver, but I had something that I've been wanting. Before I share my thing, I would like to know what Zach asked for this year, and not the thing that you just said that we had to cut out. Did you actually ask for something for Christmas?
Probably powerlifting gear.
Powerlifting, your new obsession.
Yeah, that's my new obsession.
How does that work with you and the wife? Now, Mike's newly married, so we're going to talk about this in a second with them. But do you guys, I'm always a big surpriser on Christmas. Mm-hmm. I like a surprise. Becky's family is more of a shoppers for Christmas type thing.
Okay.
We're like literally like her growing up, and she still does the same thing with Bella. Like we have a budget for Christmas, and Bella likes clothes. So instead of her buying clothes, she'll literally go to the mall with Bella, pick out a bunch of clothes that she wants, and then wrap them and put them under the tree where she already knows what everything is.
So for my wife and I, we're like 50-50 mm-hmm. on that. We're like, buy something the other person tells us they want to buy, and then surprise them on the other half.
Nice.
And Michelle is way more awesome than I am at that stuff.
Yeah. I'm usually very difficult because I don't want a lot of things, and if I do want something, I usually just get it. So it usually gets tricky. So this year, in order to help her out, I did tell Becky. When she said, what do you want for Christmas? And then she's like, why don't we just not get for each other this year? And just,
that's a lie. That's a setup.
Right. That's what I told Mike. It's a fucking setup. Mm-hmm. But usually it goes the other way. Like we've done this.
Why can he do it?
No. It goes the other way for us usually. Usually she'll be like, let's just not get for each other. And I'll be like, okay. And then I still go get her something, obviously. And then Christmas will come and I'll be sitting there the only one without a prize at Christmas.
That's sad.
It happens every time.
That's sad.
She's like, you asshole, you said that you weren't going to.
Yeah. We're like a 50-50 family.
Okay.
So that all boils down to a miscommunication between you two.
7 years in a row.
Okay, that's a little odd. That's a little odd.
7 years in a row. So this year she said, what do you want for Christmas? I said, I want a chainsaw. I want a steel chainsaw. You can go to Weldy's on Redbud Trail. It'll cost this much. Go get me a chainsaw. Call me if you can't find the right one.
Boom.
Yeah.
Now I'm super anxious to find out what happens this year.
Right. She's telling me she's ordered a bunch of stuff for me, so she's really getting into it. I had struggled with her this year because with the pandemic, usually as I tell her, most of our conversations are filled with I want every other sentence out of her. So I just like keep mental notes or literally a note in my – and it's little things like, oh, look at these boots. I want these boots. Or look at that. Or watch TV. Look at that. I want that. And I just started writing it all down. And then that's, you know, Mother's Day, Christmas, birthday. I just – but this year, like
– you said every other sentence out of her.
But she hasn't been
say that.
She hasn't been giving me the I want.
Right.
So I didn't really, but I got her something really, really, really cool. It actually is something she has said she wants really badly, but doesn't realize that it could be a Christmas prize.
Mm.
And so I got her something. So what did you tell your wife you wanted, Zachary?
A powerlifting belt.
A belt? Powerlifting belt?
I feel like we're circling back.
I know. Didn't we already do this?
Yeah.
Well, you said probably some powerlifting stuff. So you told her I want a powerlifting belt?
Yeah.
And then she'll probably surprise you with something too?
Probably way cooler than anything I could figure out.
Nice. Did she tell you what she wants for Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was like more than that. She had it like up on her phone and handed me her phone and I put my credit card information in and hit buy.
What was it?
It was a pair of leggings that she wanted.
Right. Mm. And Becky's, and see, that's Becky's family. I hate it. I hate it. And the problem is our kids are getting old enough now that it's hard to surprise them.
Yeah.
So like Quentin's like, I want an Oculus Rift S. I can say that because he's not editing this video.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that he doesn't know. It's a virtual reality thing. It's like, this is what I want. And he kind of knows our budget. And he's like, so like maybe you and grandma could go together and get it. What else do you want? Just that. And so there's no. And then of course we got it wrapped under the tree. And he comes back. He's like, oh, that looks like that's probably my Oculus. I'm like, man. I hate that.
That's messed up.
I hate it. Parker, I can still get.
Just chill out a little bit, man. You're dogging everyone in your family.
I hate them all. And Jackson was the same way. Jackson, but for years, he'd be like, I want the new PlayStation. And then he knows that he's getting the new PlayStation. Yeah. Parker's getting there. This year, Parker told me he wants a Windows tablet.
Yeah, now Parker's getting a little expensive too, huh?
Yeah, well, and that's honestly the only thing I really care about this year is I'm a little upset about Parker because we have 4 kids, so we have a budget. This is how much money we're going to spend for each kid, and we keep it even for all the kids. Well, Parker now says he wants something that costs what that budget is. So the older kids, a lot of times, will get one gift and some stuff in their stocking or whatever, but he will always get you know 15 different Lego sets and a big pile of presents for him to open. And this year, like his thing. Cost what his budget is for his one item. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. My kids right now are like on the opposite ends of the spectrum. Like Maddox wants a one wheel, which I don't know if you know what a one wheel is.
I don't.
It's like a hoverboard that has one wheel, but it has a gyroscope in the middle. So it's kind of like a Segway. Like,
okay.
It's like $1,900. Yeah. They're ridiculous. He's not getting one.
I said,
Christmas.
Did you get him one?
No, Jesus Christ. No, but that's what he wants. And then, you know, the little one's like, I want Hot Wheels. You know, I'm like
where do you get to get him a whole bunch of stuff?
I'll buy you 100 Hot Wheels, buddy.
And still have change for McDonald's afterwards. Yeah, the first thing Parker told me he wanted was a go-kart because our neighbor kid has a little go-kart and Parker's got a little electric dirt bike. And I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. I'll get him that's why I was upset about anything to get him outside. But then I looked, go-karts are about that too.
Yeah.
He used one, so he didn't get a go-kart.
Pamela says, what hints can you give about season 10?
So that's tough for me to, I can't give you too many hints without giving the case away just yet. I can tell you it's a case that jumped out to me. As you know, we had a case picked out, but we just couldn't get the records. Looks like we're not going to have the records, so we had to move on. This is a case that was pitched to us submitted to us by 3 different people. I'll tell you this, after, you know, an initial investigation, I am already convinced this person is actually innocent. It's in the story is very interesting, and there's a lot of layers to it. The only hint I'll give you is to say that one of the things that we're going to be dealing with is a juvenile interrogation with no parents or lawyers present. You just have to wait and see. We are going to be dropping season 10. We'll begin on February 7th is going to be the first episode. So you don't have much longer to wait.
Sarah wants to know how you chose the guests for this season of Truth and Justice.
That's a good question. A lot of them were different. So I have several different processes for how I choose guests. So I had, for example, David Ridgen was a podcaster that I just desperately wanted to talk to. You know, I've met him, but I really wanted to, as we got through the season and kind of got into a groove of what these conversations sound and feel like, I immediately thought, I want to have a conversation like this with David Ridgen. So that's how I got to him. A lot of them are from listener suggestions. I have a whole pile of screenshots on my phone. So whenever I'm scrolling through social media or the fan page and folks are tagging me or just commenting, man, I'd really like, you know, the Orange Tree was a good example of that. Someone made a post that said, man, I would love if we could talk to Haley and Tinu from the Orange Tree. And then I looked and there was, you know, 100 comments under where people said, it's so good, it's so good. So then I reached out to them. So sometimes it's from that. And then, you know, some of them are just from passing conversations where you just might be, you guys not may not be asking me to interview someone, but you're talking about on social media, you being our audience, that you like a particular podcast. So, you know, I'll reach out to them. And then some of them were just, you know, especially at the beginning of the season, are friends of mine that I thought would be interesting to have on the show, like Rabia and the Captain and Justin from Gen Y. And then as we're, you know, we're building up to the end of the season, some of them, like Sheila Wysocki, was literally, I just went in, instead of just going through the list, I try to mix it up of kind of the usual people that I'm familiar with. I wanted to get into, you know, podcasts I wasn't familiar with. So I literally just looked up, I Googled, you know, top 10 2020 true crime podcasts, and I wanted to see, and some of them we'd already talked to, but I saw Without Warning, I had never heard of it. And so I reached out to Sheila and set that one up. So there's different processes for all of them, just trying to make sure, you know, we had people on the show that you guys would be interested in.
Michelle says, if you could have one investigative superpower, what would it be? And before you answer this, I want to put in the caveat that it cannot be mind reading, because I think that's a cop-out.
Okay. But it's a superpower.
It is a superpower, but it just... it'll lead for better conversation if that's not on the table.
So I would say this, if thinking back to every investigation we've ever done, especially when we're out in the field working, the investigative superpower I would like to have.
Before you say it.
You're going to ruin it. What? Well, you're going to ruin whatever I'm going to say.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Okay. Give me
Zach, do you have a good idea of what he's going to say?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't know. Go ahead.
So I'm going to tell you if what you say was what I was thinking, because I think it will be. So,
you're not going to give me a caveat of what I can't say?
No. I did already. There's one rule.
I thought that's what you were doing again.
No, I'm saying I know what it is before you say it.
Okay, we'll see. My superpower would be that anyone that I want to talk to for an investigation will talk to me and interview me.
Nice. Good pick.
What did you think I was going to say?
Human lie detector.
Human lie detector. That's kind of like mind reading, though, isn't it? I mean, yeah, that would be awesome, but
it's a little different. But I don't know.
But no, my thing is, like, if I could, that's one of the most frustrating parts of investigations is when you go, especially when we try, you know, it costs us thousands of dollars. And that's, you know, the people watching this Patreon video, thank you guys, because that's a big part of what funds our travel. But if there, say there's two witnesses I need to speak to. And, you know, for me to, you know, get on a plane and get a hotel and get a rental car and all this to go down and do it, it costs a lot of money to do that. And we've had it, Mike and I have had it a couple times where we've made long trips to go knock on a couple doors and just struck out one after another. Like, nope, not going to talk to you. Nope, won't talk to you. So, like, if I could just get, talk to me, I feel like I have a pretty good skill set to try to assess the veracity of what they're telling me. If I can get a chance to talk to them, with the number one thing, and I would say that's probably most police and detectives, you know, when they have somebody in an interview or interrogation room, you know, the last thing you want them to hear them say is lawyer, which is what you should say, by the way, because they're not going to talk. If we can just get them talking, then we can get the information we need.
Sue writes, anything goes? Okay, Zach, can you talk a bit about your tattoo apprenticeship? And whether you buy into the tradition of more or less hazing apprentices.
Is that a thing? Hazing?
Yeah, hazing's a big thing.
In the tattoo world?
In the tattoo world, hazing's a big thing. And I really buy into the less. I was not hazed nearly as much as a lot of people I've heard of. And I was put into a circumstance that I thought was to succeed, which is you come in to work to work. You know what I mean? We're not here to, you know, play grab ass and do whatever. Like, a lot of the hazing is just crazy stuff. They make
What's an example of hazing?
They'll make you run naked through the town or do just crazy stuff. I know at one point they...
Wait.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've heard...
Is it like a frat? I was thinking it'd be like, oh, you got to get a tattoo of a stick figure on your leg.
No, there's, I mean, all sorts of hazing. Wash the owner's car. Do just whatever. Just stuff. I've heard of one guy being saran wrapped naked and put in the jewelry case. So like when customers came in. When customers come in, he's just totally saran wrapped in the jewelry case. Yeah.
So you didn't experience, did you get no hazing whatsoever?
I probably got some, but nothing near that.
None of it involved nudity.
Nothing that involved nudity.
Now, have you had apprentices under you before?
No, I won't take any.
You won't take any? Why is that?
Because the industry is so oversaturated that I think I'm doing my part to try to keep it where it needs to be.
Trying not to breed competition.
Yeah. Well, it's not even about breeding competition. It's just... There comes a point where, like, not every Joe on the world needs a tattoo.
Right.
And people just are doing that. Everybody that comes in and asks for them to be taught, they're being taught. And I don't honestly feel like I'm at a place to teach somebody. I've tattooed 15 years. I feel like I do a good job, but I'm not where I want to be either.
When it comes to what an apprentice actually learns, you don't actually show them your style because everyone will have their own specific style when it comes to drawing pictures, right?
I mean, for the most part, yeah, you do teach them things, but everybody does have their own style, but there's a lot of things you do pick up. You know, I tattoo a lot like my mentor, just because that's how you're taught. You learn things, even if it's not artistic, you know, art-wise.
Right. That's interesting. I just never looked at it like that. It's pretty cool. All right. Bobby says, of all the cases you've covered and discussed in season 9, which one was the most intriguing? Which one was the most upsetting? Wishing you all a safe, happy holiday season.
Thanks, Bobby. Oh, gosh, the most intriguing,
I could tell you mine if you're not there.
Yeah, go ahead.
The most intriguing is honestly the Donnie Izzet case that we just talked about.
The someone knows
that was
case.
Really intriguing to me. The most upsetting for me is two of them: is Brian Schaefer and Maura Murray. Because there is no end. There's no body. We don't know.
Right.
Know, those families have no closure. Some of these cases, obviously, they're gruesome. They're sad. But there's some sort of closure. With those cases, there's no closure. And I think that's what's probably the most upsetting to me.
Any of the missing persons cases are like that. I would say that, yeah, those are very intriguing to me. It's frustrating because it's especially like every time I interview. So when I talk to Captain about the Schaefer case and when I talk to Tim and Lance about the Maura Murray case, it starts to trigger that thing in me where I'm like, okay, I want to dive in. Let's find, we can figure this out. There's got to be a way to track these people down and figure it out. I think probably the most upsetting one, it's hard to say because I'm trying to even thinking through all of them, but the Orange Tree podcast story, and I apologize, I'm drawing a blank on the name of the victims. I had too many run through my head, but that one was just really tragic. You know, the young girl finally kind of getting herself together. She's starting a new job at a law firm the next day. And the fact that she's, you know, killed and, you know, desecrated in the way that she was. And then the fact that I'm not comfortable with the resolution either. You know, I think that the person that was convicted, you know, maybe he should be there, maybe he shouldn't. I feel like that Laura, the accomplice in helping to try to cover it up, I think she probably had more involvement as walking for it. Just the case is icky to me. It's icky what happened, and it's in the finality of it is icky too. Like, I just don't feel like the truth has ever really come out, and I don't feel like justice was served.
Craig says, if money was no object, what would be your ideal holiday? And any chance you're coming back to Scotland, specifically Glasgow, for another tour?
I would love to, as long as somebody wants to bring me there. When we went to the UK, that was somebody reached out to us and said, you know, we'll pay your expenses if you'll come out here and do a speaking tour. And I loved it. And I'd love to do it again. So if you know somebody in Glasgow, and I'm Scottish and I loved going to Scotland, and I would love to, that's one of my dream vacations, to answer the other part of your question. I would love to go spend, you know, a couple weeks in Europe in general, but more specifically Scotland. But aside from that, a place that I've always wanted to go is a long vacation in Alaska during the summertime. And you know, go fishing and hiking and just spend time in the outdoors and just really, it's a beautiful state in the summertime, and I'd love to go check it out. Zach, your dream holiday?
I've been fortunate to be a few pretty interesting places that I probably would say I would go back to. One is Fiji. Mm-hmm. Like, I would go back to Fiji. And the other one that's that I haven't been to that I would love to go to is Iceland.
Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. And Iceland is not the icy one. Greenland is.
Correct.
Oddly enough. Mm-hmm.
Iceland's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mike?
Hawaii for me.
Hawaii. Get those beaches and...
volcanoes.
Beaches and volcanoes.
Go to Fiji. Go back to... I went to Fiji. Go to Fiji. Don't go to Hawaii. Go to Fiji.
Now I'm going to have to do some research.
That's his dream. He just ruined his dream.
Fiji.
Jules says, what's something good that happened in your lives due to the pandemic?
Family time for me. More specifically, family dinner time. I mean, it's been rough having, you know, three of our kids are still at home and doing homeschooling. The teenagers pretty much handle their own stuff. It's been rough with Parker, our little one. But what's been really nice is we've always, like, when Becky is, like, planning out our meals and stuff and the weeks the kids are here, we always would try to plan at least one meal that everybody would eat, so we'll all sit down together. Because a lot of times she's cooking some very, you know, she cooks very healthy and organic stuff. And
chicken mush.
Like the chicken mush that, you know, the kids won't necessarily eat. So there's a lot of time it's like, okay, well, we're having this and then we're making a pizza for the kids and doing, you know, other things. But during the pandemic, during all this lockdown, she started like always planning the menu to where we have every single night a sit down family dinner. And it's just, it's been a real blessing, and we're continuing to do it and we'll continue to do it. It's been amazing. I think it's something that a lot of people don't do anymore, but the being able to sit down with my wife and kids every night, and, you know, I think we have a very amusing family. There's a lot of laughing that goes on in all of our dinners. Someone's usually getting picked on, but it rotates around, so it's fair.
And not to take a cop out and say family time, because family time is really easy for me to say. That's easily the number one thing that's happened to me.
But, well, it's been a huge change for you because of your schedule.
Because of my schedule. But, you know, if I look past the family time, I would say the ability to get my physical health under control. That mm-hmm. was a big thing, that because I have more time.
Right.
Saving money for me.
Big positive. Yeah. And that's true too. I'm sure a lot of people, but for us too. You know, we used to, on the weekends, we didn't have kids, we'd always, you know, go out to dinner all weekend and go out for drinks with friends. And we just, yeah, we chill at home, saving a lot of money.
Holly wants to know, can we please do a Patrick Hines and Bob Ruff miniseries talking cocktails, true crime, and the juxtaposition of the Midwestern life versus NYC living?
Oh my God, I would love that. I will pitch that to Patrick. I don't know how that works and what it would look like, but Patrick and I are very, very opposites. But, you know, when I got to know him, he is one of my favorite people on the planet, and that would be so fun. I don't know if anybody would listen, but it would be so fun.
Laura says, I just always wonder how often you, Bob, or David, or other podcasters feel some element of danger during investigations and how you deal with that. Seems like knocking on doors of potential killers has to be not just nerve-wracking, but dangerous at times.
Yeah, it can be. It takes a lot of self-talk for me. Like, you have to sort of dig down and try to find your inner badass, or at least put on the image of badass. When there's definitely been some times when Mike and I have been in the field. One time when Mike had to crawl down underneath the dashboard and refused to tell me over my headset that somebody was about to do a drive-by behind us.
That was my lowest point in 5 years of working together. Why did you say my lowest point?
I'm sorry.
Can we talk about my greatest achievement on the road? Why don't we go there?
When you got that guy.
Go that way.
Or which one are we talking about? I mean, I can think of a few. The one I'm thinking of is when it was after hours and we were at a bar and these guys were harassing these girls.
No.
You whispered in the man's ear and men, three grown men walk out of a bar and you still won't tell me what you said. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
But there's been some hairy situations like that. And Mike did definitely bail on me one time. left me hung out to dry. But then your greatest achievement was?
That fingerprint acquisition.
Oh, yes. That was Mike went undercover. We can't get into the details of it, but undercover and was in extreme danger to retrieve fingerprints from someone we needed fingerprints for a case. Yeah, that was you totally made up for the other incident from years before that. But yeah, it's I don't know. For me personally, it's tough when I'm going into those situations. I literally have to sit here and think, like, people are expecting you to do this. You need to do this to get what you need. So buck up and go do it. And then I try to pretend like I'm not scared to death.
Jacqueline wants an update on Jesse Eldridge.
I know people keep asking for updates in some of these cases, but with Jesse, with a lot of them, once they're as far into the process as Jesse's case is, I get cut out. And so, as you guys know who listened to season 3, I was able to get Troy Eldridge to recant his testimony. That was turned over to the Innocence Project, who took it to the DA's office. I know they took Troy in and gave him a polygraph test, which he passed, in order for him to try and prove that he was telling the truth, that he did not have any idea who killed Kial Gove. So he's got IPTX, he's got the Conviction Integrity Unit all involved, and they've been doing more and more DNA testing. So it seems as though Jesse Eldridge is absolutely going to get out of there. It's just, man, the wheels are turning slow, and this pandemic didn't help. And I don't really know what the holdup is right now.
Erica says, if there was one unsolved case that you could know the answer to, which one would it be?
Well, I mean, that's tough because the obvious answers are the West Memphis 3 case. But if I had to pick one, so the West Memphis 3 case, I believe that I already know who did it and what happened there. Could be wrong, but I think that I know that. Another big one is, you know, all of our seasons, you know, Haman Lee's murder, but I think I know what happened there. Elnora Griffin's murder, our season 2 case. I believe I know who killed her. So if I had to pick one, just one case to know what happened, I would say the murder of Kial Gove. Because also in some of the, you know, Ed's already out of prison, the West Memphis 3 are out of prison. Jesse is still sitting behind bars, Jesse Eldridge, for the murder of Kial Gove. He absolutely did not do it. And that's one of the cases that we just don't know exactly who did do it. And I would add right into that Jamie Melgar's murderer too. You know, that's another one where I feel like we've got a good direction on what happened, but we haven't been able to pinpoint it. And poor Sandy's still sitting in prison, and whoever killed her husband is walking free. So that definitely is another one that I would love to know the answer to.
Okay, and this one's our last question for 2021. Katie says, this past season has proven to me that there are so many great true crime podcasts these days, I can barely keep up. Do you think it will ever hit a saturation point, or do you think there are unlimited opportunities for new podcasts in this genre?
The latter, in my opinion. I think that there's definitely a saturation. I guarantee you, in the time that you were listening to this episode, someone launched a new true crime podcast. And there's literally millions of them. But it's been this season has been fascinating for me to get to listen to and get to know some of these other podcasts and some of the lesser known ones, to realize that there's so much more great podcasts out there that maybe aren't getting the attention because of the saturation. So that's a bit of a problem. But so I think that's the only issue with it, is not that there's no space for it. There is. I just think for new true crime podcasters, it's a tough space to get into, because there's so much noise. For anybody to be able to hear you through the noise is going to be tough. But I wouldn't let that discourage anyone, because if you're putting out something good, in the days of social media, you know, the Orange Tree is a great example of that. You know, this little college journalism class puts this thing together and puts it out, and as soon as a few people listen and find out it's good, you all, and us included too, as the true crime audience community, are very good about spreading the word about the good ones. So I think there will always continue to be more and more great true crime podcasts. People are constantly thinking outside the box and coming up with new methods and styles and formats. And I love it. I love that that's happening. And that's part of the reason why, you know, we're doing what we're doing with this season, and why we're going to continue. Also, I guess a good time to make, I don't remember if I said this or not before, but the podcast, this format after February, when we switch to season 10, is going to continue. We're going to continue every week to interview other true crime podcasts about cases, for you to get to know them, their show, and the case that they're talking about. The name, though, is not going to be the case of. The name that we have landed on, and the very first episode, and pretty soon we'll have a trailer out, and you'll be able to subscribe there so you're ready and waiting for it when it launches. But the first episode of the new show is going to air on February 3rd, which happens to be my birthday. Happy birthday to me. But the name of the new podcast is actually going to be titled True Crime Binge, which I think fits right in with this question. Because what me learning throughout this process. There are so many great true crime podcasts out there, and that audiences like yourself are constantly in the search of their next big true crime binge. That's kind of where I came up with the name of the show. That's what we're going to call it. And it'd be, you know, probably a little bit more lighthearted than we do here on the Truth and Justice podcast. But the same basic format we're going to take over to the new show, True Crime Binge, which will let you know when you can, when the trailer's out and you can get subscribed to that so you're ready to roll when episode one drops.
All right, that's going to do it for questions this week. We were all over the place with those, but it was a lot of fun, kind of different to close the year out on a good, happy, positive note.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Hopefully you guys like that. I know obviously it's not our normal format, but it's this whole year hasn't been a normal format for anyone, whether it's on the podcast or at home. We want to wish all of you a happy holidays and a happy new year. We will be back the Friday follow-up for the episode you're going to hear this coming Sunday. We'll air on New Year's Day. So we're going to start fresh on January 1st, 2021. Thank you guys so much for all of your patience through this season and your perseverance for keep plugging along through what's been obviously a pretty rough year. And for our last episode of 2020, we have in 2 days on Sunday discussing the Golden State Killer case, the one and only Mr. Paul Holes. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing, and all music for the show was created and composed by PutThemInASong.com. Our follow-up logo was created by Zach Weaver, and all of our font across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Charlena White, Kaywood Yomnick, Ginger Viola, Edith Swanneck, Lindsay Pease, and Jen Reese in Candela. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in a number of ways. To financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. On the Patreon page, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we also have reward levels. For just $5 per month, you get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes and behind-the-scenes videos of the creation of our Friday follow-up episodes that include 10 to 30 minutes of pre-show bonus chat. Other reward levels include t-shirts, hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the companies that sponsor this program. If you have a new case you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is to engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. And like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters, you can connect with us on Twitter at Truth Justice Pod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Mike can be found at Murb Gaming, MURRBGAMING. And Zach can be found at Z to the Q. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, and tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Mike Bussing.
This has been Truth and Justice.